This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, Wisconsin lakes will be a testing ground this coming year to see how organisms respond to climate change and pollution. We'll talk to a biologist recently awarded a National Science Foundation grant for that research. First, immigration has been one of the most hotly debated issues of the 2016 Republican primary race so far. Since Donald Trump joined the pack in June, candidates have sparred over who should enter the country and what to do with unauthorized immigrants already here. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, immigrants make up 17% of the workforce. One of the biggest questions in the debate is how new people entering the country affect the workforce and overall economy. Do immigrants increase unemployment and suppress wages? Do they create jobs and help bridge a skills gap? On Labor Day, we want to try to untangle some of those biggest economic questions about immigration. Stephen Deller joins us to help do that. He's professor of applied economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Pleased to be here.
So, big picture, how much of the country's GDP, how much of our economic output is produced by immigrants?
I think it's probably less than the 17%. And I think that's because a lot of the immigrants are actually working in lower skill type jobs. And as a result, they're not contributing to the gross domestic product or the overall economy to the same extent as others.
Now, you mentioned those lower-wage, low-skilled workers. A lot of times it seems like there are two separate conversations about immigrants in the labor force, those low-end ones and then the high-skilled jobs that some on both parties are trying to attract to the country. Let's talk about those high-skilled workers first. How do they affect our economy?
Well, let me confuse it even a little bit more. I think there's three types of immigrants that are coming in. One is what's called H-1 visa immigrants. These are the folks that have PhDs, advanced degrees, they're engineers, they're biochemists, they're ones that are working for Google and Microsoft and some of the research labs. And those are the folks that are actually kind of contributing to kind of the technological edge that the U.S. has. I mean, they're an important piece of U.S. innovation, and I think they're extremely important to have here. The second is kind of the laborers that you mentioned. This is where a lot of the illegal immigrants are kind of working in. These are your dishwashers and fry cooks and things like that, and agricultural workers. Those are the ones that are really working the lower paid jobs. They're basically working jobs that your typical American doesn't want. The third, the complicated, is really kind of the entrepreneurial immigrant. When you look at a lot of lower income inner city areas and a lot of rural communities, you look at a lot of the small businesses that are starting up, they're being started up by immigrants. And these folks are bringing very much of an entrepreneurial spirit into the communities that they're locating in. Now, a lot of these may not grow up to be the next Google or Microsoft, but they are an important part of the U.S. economy.
Well, let's start again with that that lower wage group, often, as you say, the unauthorized immigrants here. One of the frequent arguments for a tougher immigration control is that they work for low wages, and therefore they either drive wages down for other low-wage workers or they crowd them out of jobs. How much do we know about that actual impact?
A lot of it is case study based because there really isn't a whole lot of really good secondary data to kind of do more what we call ecological studies, which is kind of comparing, you know, let's use Wisconsin counties and see what's happening from a statistical perspective. What's happening is that there is a labor shortage at this low end. When you're talking minimum wage jobs, minimum wage with no benefits and not necessarily pleasant jobs, Americans won't take those jobs, period. We won't. So there's a labor shortage. And what these immigrant workers are doing is actually filling a gap in the labor market. My work with a lot of rural communities, you have a lot of dairy farmers in Wisconsin that are very concerned about some of these immigration reforms because they realize that, there are farmers out there that are saying, I'm willing to pay $15 an hour. I still can't get workers. And the Latino workers are actually, for $15 an hour, they're excellent workers. So take these dairy farmers, for example, and they say, I'm offering $15 an hour. I can't offer more than that. It doesn't make business sense for me. And I can't get local people to take those jobs. So what do I do? Well, I try to partner with those immigrant labor supply.
So from a market perspective, maybe if that supply of labor willing to work at that wage wasn't present, if there was some kind of crackdown, they weren't there, would wages eventually nudge up to the point where American workers would take those jobs?
No, because I think that a lot of the businesses that we're talking about simply cannot, they don't have the profit margin in order to pay those higher wages. One of the things within agriculture is that we've had a policy, a U.S. policy of cheap food. And the way that that's played out is that the margins or the profit levels within agriculture are very, very thin, which means that you cannot afford to pay higher wages within these industries. You simply cannot afford to do it. You'll go out of work. So even if you took that supply of labor away, right, you said, okay, well, what you're going to do is you're going to have to force wages up. What you're going to do is you're going to drive a lot of these businesses under. It's the same type of thing that when we're talking about raising the minimum wage up to $15 an hour, those same businesses that are that would be negatively affected by that would be negatively affected by reducing the immigration flow.
Talking to economist Stephen Deller from UW-Madison about immigration in the United States and the impact it has on workers and the economy. Now, an argument I've seen kind of from the other side, from pro-reform, pro-legalization advocates, is you've got unauthorized workers, and you've got some people here on work visas that say you can only work with this one particular company. That, they say, creates a workforce that has no options, no ability to bargain with employers. If they don't like their working conditions or their wages, their choices are leave, risk legal problems, or just stick with it. So they say by having more legal workers, that would give them more bargaining options, drive wages up for themselves and maybe everybody else. Is there anything to that?
Are there unscrupulous employers that are taking advantage of this labor supply? Yeah, there are. And is that a problem that we should be dealing with? Yeah, I think we should be. But I think that, you know, these are shades of gray in terms of complexity of the issue. And unfortunately, with a lot of the policy discussion right now, it's talked about in terms of black and white. Either open up the gates and let everybody in, or put a wall up. Put a wall up against Canada. And it's you know, it's kind of silly season in a lot of these political discussions around this.
The Economic Policy Institute, a group generally on the left, recommended maybe making immigration numbers more responsive to the current state of economy. So instead of the same guidelines from year to year, say, if the economy is booming, we need more labor. Let's let more legal immigrants in. Things are slowing down. There's more unemployment. Slow it down. Or even job specific. Hey, if there's high unemployment in construction trades, don't give work visas to construction workers coming in at a high level. Can we have a more nuanced approach that meets the needs, the year-to-year needs of our economy?
If Washington was functional, I'd say yes. The question is that how would you implement a policy like that in this current political environment? The question is whether or not we can develop a policy that we can fine-tune and that is nimble and flexible. And I'm not sure that we could do that right now. So I think what we need is a set of policies that are reasonable and that eliminate a lot of the uncertainty and risk that's associated with immigration right now.
Well, reasonable, I think, is in the eye of the beholder in many ways. But can you spell out at least the contours of what a reasonable reform might look like?
I think a reasonable reform is, well, you have to look at the immigrants and why they want to come to the U.S. Many of them are economic immigrants. They're coming here simply because they want to try to provide a better living for their families. And those immigrants are different than immigrants that are coming to the U.S. because of political conflict. Europe right now is struggling very much with the flood of refugees coming from the Syrian war in that part of the country or that part of the world. And then we have the high end. I mean, the immigrants that have the PhDs that are coming and wanting those, you know, these high tech jobs. Can we have one blanket policy that covers all of those? I don't think we can. It's too subtle for that. Now, if we want to take it apart and say for these high, you know, for these high wage potential immigrants, high education, high skills, let's have one set of rules for them and then another set of rules for asylum seekers and a third set of rules for more kind of just pure economic immigrants, I think that we could actually come up with something a little bit more reasonable.
It's Labor Day. We're talking to Stephen Deller, professor of applied economics at UW-Madison, about how immigration affects the U.S. workforce and economy. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you have an experience with how immigration affects the workforce and the economy? Are you an immigrant yourself? What's your work story? Are you an employer who maybe has employed immigrant workers at some point in your career? And what do you think the country should change, if anything, when it comes to immigration laws? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. It's Labor Day. We're continuing our conversation with Stephen Deller. He's a professor of applied economics at UW-Madison, talking about how immigration affects the U.S. workforce and economy. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you think the country should craft its immigration policy to best benefit the workforce and the economy? Are you an immigrant? Do you employ immigrants? Let us know what you think at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a call. We've got Heidi on the line in Campbellsport. Heidi, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what do you want to bring up, Heidi?
Well, I have no issues with immigrants and having them be a part of the workforce. Where I would have more issues is how they're affecting the rest of the economy and things such as, are they paying taxes the same as the citizens are? Are they paying for education the same as the citizens are and health insurance and all of those things? Or are a lot of those things being funded through the citizens' taxpayer dollar? You know, like I have to pay and co-sign and everything else for my kids to be able to go on to college. But I know there's times where the immigrants are going to school and learning English for free and
Thanks a lot for bringing that issue up. That's something I wanted to get into too, Steve. Do we know, this is a common argument, how much do immigrants, especially unauthorized immigrants, pay into Social Security, the taxation system, versus services that they, maybe their families might receive?
Well, first of all, there's really three types of taxes that we pay in general. The big three are sales tax, property taxes, and income taxes. Immigrants, whether they're legal or undocumented immigrants, they're paying property taxes and sales taxes. Every time they go to the store and buy something, they're paying taxes. Whenever they pay their rent to their landlord, the landlord is taking some of that money and paying their property taxes. The question is the income tax and Social Security tax. And that is really a function of how the employer has set them up. Is the employer treating the immigrant worker as a paid employee and is withholding property tax or withholding income taxes and making Social Security payments? Or is the employer treating these immigrants as, say, contract workers, where they're simply paying them cash under the table? That cash under the table is not strictly illegal, but it's kind of getting into that gray zone. So I'm not sure it's really the immigrants that are it's how their employers are setting up the relationship here. Now, in terms of whether or not they're paying their fair share, you know, when you get into a lot of these, you know, what is the cost? What are the public service costs? And one way is, and a lot of this is talked about in terms of public schools, it really depends on the public school system itself. A lot of public school systems are operating at, say, 70% capacity, and adding a handful of immigrant children really costs hardly anything. If the school is crowded and you start adding more immigrants, guess what? That's going to cost a lot more. Now, a lot of rural communities are suffering with this English as a second language problem, particularly when you see a lot of large food processing plants that bring in a lot of immigrants. That's a cost. But I think that most of these rural communities are actually kind of embracing these immigrants coming in because it's a breath of fresh air into these communities. You're starting to see businesses pop up in these downtown areas that are related to the immigrant population. So while there's a shaky transition to begin with, I think most communities are welcoming them with open arms.
Heidi, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Alan in Appleton. Alan, hi.
Hi, thank you. I've installed equipment in a number of manufacturing facilities in Milwaukee in the recent years and all over the country. And the one place that I worked at in Milwaukee that was Union, which was Wacker, which is right next to Harley-Davidson, great place to work in, very clean. There were two other facilities, at least I worked in Milwaukee, that were coating facilities. 75%, I'm going to say roughly, of the people there that worked there were Hispanic. In a majority, black or white town, and I'm pretty sure that most of them didn't speak English that I tried to interact with. And so I don't know, and I'm a pretty liberal person, and I'm pro-immigration, but I don't think people realize actually what is going on there. These, and the places I worked at were dirty, they were dangerous. I couldn't breathe in the one. Like, we were installing some equipment, we were working just a little ways away from some guys that actually worked in the plant full-time. I mean, the chemicals that they were using were bad. This stuff happens all over the place. These places are nasty, and they have no protections, and that's why they hire people that don't have rights.
Alan, thanks a lot for the call. So he says these workers Hispanic. He thinks mostly immigrants, maybe some authorized, subject to unsafe working conditions in these manufacturing facilities. I don't know if there's much research in this area, Stephen.
This goes back to the comments early on in the session, where manufacturing is really kind of composed of two different types of jobs. One is kind of high-skilled engineering, need to be comfortable working with computers and high-end. The other is kind of the low-end remedial type labor, and those remedial type labor jobs, most of them, they don't pay very much, not necessarily pleasant working conditions, and most Americans won't take those jobs. You go into the food processing plants, particularly some of the poultry plants and beef plants, the slaughterhouses. You go into those in Iowa, and it's all Latino workers. Why? Because we can't afford to pay what most Americans would require to work in those kind of conditions. They're very unpleasant conditions, and these Latino workers are more than pleased to take them.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Stephen Deller, economist at UW-Madison, about immigration and how it affects the U.S. labor force and the economy. Back to our callers now with Bob on the line in Madison. Bob, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. This question maybe is more out of curiosity than anything. I travel to Mexico with my business, and I hear very often down there, not so much recently, but in the past few years, that the income in Mexico has increased tremendously by the dollars leaving our country and going to Mexico from the immigrants and laborers here that are sending money home to families, to the point that it's now second or third as far as the national income for Mexico. And I wondered, truth in that, if there's that much money leaving this country, nobody ever speaks to that.
Bob, thanks for the call. Steve?
Actually, there is a fair amount of remittance going back into these countries. We did a study, it's about 10 years ago now, so it's getting a little data. These were migrant farm workers. These were the kind of farm workers that would, move from farm to farm to farm. And what we found is that the amount of money going back to their home country depended upon whether or not it was a family that was moving from site to site, or whether or not it was a single male. A single male, you're right, the vast majority, about three-quarters of the money was going back to their home country. Their family. But if it was a family that was moving, about three-quarters of that money stayed here. Now, some of the stuff that's going back is they're actually buying things here in the U.S. That you cannot really buy in a lot of these developing countries in Central America, and they're shipping them back. So you may buy a maybe an iPhone is a bad example, but you would buy something like that here, and you'd ship it home. So where are the taxes being paid? The taxes are being paid here.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Bruce with us in Toma. Bruce, hi.
Hi. I'm an accountant, and I've worked for manufacturers in the metal industry, plastic industries, for the past 30 years. And I've done the budget, so I know what everybody is making in the factories that I've worked at. And the wages, I won't go into details, but I can remember a person's wages being $10 an hour in a small town like Eau Claire, size city, in 1988-89. And the same type of job right now in Chicago, all it pays $14.75, $15 an hour, something like that. Benefits about the same in both situations. I realize the employers pay more percentage for health care benefits than they did in 88, but I'm just saying is that a lot of these jobs that are stepping stones for better ones are being held, the wages are being held down by immigration. And another thing, too, is that when you work in these factories, they want a lead person in the factory floor. Oh, they want somebody who speaks Spanish preferred. Well, that eliminates, and I've seen it, eliminates a lot of employees who can only speak English.
Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. So he says, stepping stone jobs for Americans who want to move on to something else, maybe being taken by immigrants, some lead jobs now Americans being bumped out of. Is there, do we see any of that at the factory level, Steve?
I think you're seeing a little bit of both. I think the question is it the immigrants coming in and saying, I'm willing to work cheaper than an American worker, or is it the employer that is saying, I want to pay as low as I possibly can? And that's one of the way that businesses drive profitability is they've got one of two choices to drive profitability. One is I'm going to lower my cost as low as I possibly can, which means cheap labor. And if it's immigrants, it's immigrants. Or I'm going to try to become as innovative as I possibly can and become profitable that way. A lot of businesses in Wisconsin have taken the first approach. They want to drive their costs down as low as possible. That means cheap labor. A lot of Americans won't work for that cheap, those low wages. They prefer better-paying jobs.
We'll leave it there for now. Steve, thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Stephen Deller, professor of applied economics at UW-Madison, talking about immigration and the U.S. workforce and economy. You can keep sharing your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.